analogy that speaks more to those that were alive probably in the 50s, 60s, 70s, maybe even into the 80s. But today, you know, a 72-inch TV is 120-inch TV. These are all the rage, right? But we used to have TVs that big. They're as big as the altar. The problem was the screen was only about as big as the bouquet in front of the altar. And you would turn this TV on, and the first thing would be this little white glow right in the center. And then it would go across. And then it would come up and down. And pretty soon you would have a box about like that. And you could, as kids, we'd just be sitting around memorized by that. Mesmerized by that. Waiting to see what was coming on. Waiting to see all of the snow and all of the poor reception that we thought was so cool at the time. Today, we get the giant TVs, 4D, 3D, prism, reverse curvature, whatever it might be. You know, someday people are going to look at those things and they're going to say, I can't believe those people in the 2000s had this garbage to watch. But that's the way it was. Before the time of Christ, all they had really was radio reception. And it wasn't very good. We can tell that because the Israelite community again and again lost reception. And they would go off on their own way. And then God would come down and reach through them. But when Jesus comes, it's like they all of a sudden got a TV. And that they could see God right there in their midst. And that's what the transfiguration is about. Because they were used to, even with Christ there, they're used to looking at this little dot and this little tiny picture. But now in this transfiguration, all of a sudden, they get to see everything. They get to see Christ in His greatest glory. Nothing has changed. Nothing is there that wasn't there the day before. But their vision was clouded. There's nothing that in those TVs from 50 years ago that isn't in our TVs today. But today's technology is so much better. And so the pictures are so much clearer and we see everything in a whole new way. We will see things in another way when we are face to face with Christ. And anything that we have in this world will seem like a 1940s very first television that ever came out. In His divinity, Christ is transfigured. It is that immediate change so that we can see Him for who He is, for what He is. Everything is revealed. Our humanity isn't quite that way. We are transformed little by little. We need conversion. We need that metanoia that we spoke of last week. We need a model and a guide, and that model and guide is Christ's transfiguration, because that is what we are aimed to. That is what we are called to be. We don't get there immediately, but hopefully we have that guide so that we can get there little by little and not keep falling backwards. Daniel's vision prefigured this transfiguration. He was there at the time when the Israel was in exile. He was in prison. And while he was in prison, he received this vision that we read about in our first reading, where he sees one like a son of man coming on the clouds who rose to the throne of the ancient one. He's given a kingdom over all the world, over all the nations, all the languages. This prophecy is partially fulfilled in Christ in his first coming, but it will be fulfilled in his second coming. Jesus didn't come to be only the king of the Jews. He came to be the king of all. And he appears there with Moses and Elijah. Moses representing the law. Elijah representing the prophets. Those two foundational legs of Judaism. And to really get what is happening here, we need to understand how they got to that point. How they got to that mountain. Peter had confessed to Jesus when he asked, "Who do people say that I am?" And Peter says, "You are the Son of God, the one who is coming into the world." And then Jesus tells him about his suffering and death that will be coming. And it's too much for Peter. And he says, "No, God forbid anything like that should happen to you." His faith is shaken. And Peter says, "Get behind me." Or Jesus says to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan, for thinking about suffering as human beings do and not seeing it as God does. Because we see it as a weakness. We see it as impotence, a failure. Something that could never be imposed on an all-powerful God. But God sees it as a path to glory. But not just for him, because the next thing he teaches them is, if anyone would come after me, let him take up his cross and follow. This is a call out of ourselves, a call into Christ's suffering, into Christ's death. Something his disciples had a hard time grasping, something that we can still have a hard time grasping. So after 6 days after this, we find Jesus, and he takes Peter and James and John, and he climbs up this high mountain. Have you ever climbed a high mountain? A 12,000, 14,000 foot mountain in Colorado? It gives a whole new perspective. It's a beautiful view. The air seems sharper, crisper. For the ancient people, God dwelt on a high mountain. Moses received the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. Elijah defeated the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. Christ ascended from the mountain, and here he climbs the mountain for his transfiguration. It takes a lot of effort to climb a mountain. It takes a lot of effort to follow Christ. So Jesus leads them up where he is transfigured before them, and Moses and Elijah appear with him in all their glory. And they're speaking with Jesus about his exodus. So when the disciples heard the word exodus, they would have thought about Moses and his exodus, where he led the people of Israel out of physical slavery to the Egyptians. Well, Jesus' exodus isn't going to be leading them out of a physical slavery, but is leading them out of slavery to sin. And the transfiguration also fulfilled Jesus' prophecy that there are some here who will behold the Son of Man in his kingdom. There's also proof for the disciples, so that despite his suffering and death, it would not mean defeat. His defeat wouldn't come about through weakness. He would freely choose these things. And Peter knew all of this. He knew the history of Moses and Elijah. He knew all of these things. And so he wants to remain with them. He wants to stay in their company. Lord, let us build 3 tents here. That his mission is not only for those who are with him in the moment, but King of all, for all ages. He comes to bring us on an exodus, to bring us into heaven with him. And then the disciples hear this voice from heaven. This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. And the apostles are frightened. They fall to the ground. They cover their heads. They don't know what's going on. But at his touch, they begin to rise and to follow Jesus in a new way. Their transformation had just taken a huge step. It's a transformation that would take another huge step to be completed at Pentecost, giving them the courage to witness to Christ despite persecutions that are going to come into their lives. Peter says in our second reading today, we ourselves heard this voice from heaven while we were with him on the holy mountain. His witness is reliable. He is a lamp shining in a dark place, a new dawn awaiting in our hearts until we are transformed in his transfiguration. It's easy to remain where we are, to forget about conversion, to stay on top of the mountain, to be with Peter wanting to build those 3 booths, to stay in the moment, forget about going back to the world. But that's not our calling, and that wasn't the calling of the disciples, because it was after this event that Peter received the keys to the kingdom. It was after this event that the disciples received their mission. In the transfiguration, the disciples' eyes were open, but it wasn't their physical eyes. It was the eyes of their heart, the eyes of their soul, their spiritual eyes. And they're able to see that it's not all about worldly success as a primary goal of life. We can find purpose in anything and everything, even suffering and loss. And this transfiguration gives us strength to remain faithful when we are afraid, when we are unsure, when we cannot see the hand of God reaching through tragic moments in our lives to lead us to his embrace. When we seek to avoid the cross at all costs, we can say with Peter, Lord, it is good that we are here. These words of Peter impact our lives today. Not to suffer for the sake of suffering. That's foolish. But because of who is there with them on the mountain and who is here with us at each and every moment of our life. It is good that we are here so that we may listen to the words of the Father. This is my beloved Son. Listen to him.